Welcome to Headlines. This is David Lichtenstein. This week we will have a guest host. His name is Rav David Grossman. He's the Rosh Beis Havad. We will also have Rav Chaim Weg, the Rosh Koel of Beis Havad, Koel for Dayanis, and Rabbi Yosef Greenwald. And they will be speaking about the problems in today's competitive retail environment, both online, offline, speaking about Geneva Stas, Oina, Mekartoyes, fascinating current questions, an interesting show. Next week, we will have the Chief Rabbi of South Africa, and he will be speaking about Shabbos across the world, how he was inspired to create 80-some-odd countries it's in, not as many as Esther, but many countries. And we will also have Magoyen Rabbi Yehuda David Bleich, who will be speaking about fertility issues. We have some very interesting shows coming up. You can listen to us Matzah Shabbos from 11 to 12 midnight on WMCA 570 AM or on the Nachum Segal Network. Also Monday 11 AM on Nachum Segal. You can find all our shows at www.headlinesbook.com under the podcast section or on iTunes. We have a new hotline. Well, it's an old hotline. You can listen to our previous shows at 732-806-8700. And you can always email any questions to info@headlinesbook.com. Sure, I'm glad I got that out of the way. So I want to talk about something that's really very pertinent. You know, we read these parshas. We know Chazal say Maase Avosim Labanim. We say Masi Agiu Maase Lamaase Avosai. So here's something interesting. Maase Avos. Everyone, and I mean everybody listening, is likely to have a son or a daughter who's very different from you. Very different. You like to learn. Maybe your son doesn't like to learn. You are studious. He or she is not. Or maybe you were practical and they're creative, a dreamer. Maybe you're a dreamer and they're practical. You went to this school, that yeshiva. They have no interest in going to your alma mater. They're just not interested. Be it a Beis Yaakov, Brisk, Mir. They want to go to a different school, different friends, different school. And you are really upset. You can't get over it. You know, it's nothing new. It says when Elio comes, what is he going to do? The Heshiv Lev Avos Al Banim, Lev Banim Al Avosam. He's going to fix the rift between you and your child, or maybe you and your parents. Right? This is a real problem. It causes machlekes. What does it cause? Estranged parents and children. Tears. Wars. Broken up families. Parents and children who don't talk to each other. And it's not just us commoners. I remember years ago when I learned in Eretz Yisrael, there was a very prominent person, I won't say his name, from a very great family or leader. And he had a bunch of sons. And he would say, these two are my sons. And these two, he would say, they're from my wife's side of the family. His wife came from a pedestrian family. And everybody listening would laugh. I guarantee you, the sons who came from the wife's side, I promise you they didn't think it was funny. Right? Why am I telling you this? You know, the Gemara says, L'asid Lavei, Hashem is going to come and he's going to say to the Avos, Banecha Chatu. He's saying, you know, the Jews, they weren't so good. Let's face it, 90% of Judaism today is not religious. Right? He's going to say 70% into marriage. Hashem's going to say, Banecha Chatu, and Avram's going to say, Yimachu al Kiddush Shemecha, let them die. And Yaakov's going to say the same thing, and Kavyachal's going to say, Loi b'sabi taimi v'loi b'dar de kemili, and he's going to Yitzchak, and Yitzchak's going to say, no, you can't do palgalai palgalach. Let him go. Like, why does Yitzchak take this attitude? What was unique about Yitzchak? And it says Hashem listens to him. So look at this week's parsha. Vayehev Yitzchak, Yitzchak loves Esav. I mean, Esav's a bad guy, a really bad guy. He did a lot of damage to Klal Yisrael forever, right? And it says he brought daughters-in-law into the house of Yitzchak, and they filled up with incense of Avodah Zarah, the house of Yitzchak. I mean, we're not talking about bringing the wrong newspaper into your house. We're talking about bringing Avodah Zarah into your house. And Yitzchak never stops loving Esav. And you know why? Because the Torah, what's the Maase Avosim Labanim here? You're the father, you're the mother, you love your child. Period. End of story. Yitzchak loves Esav. Yitzchak is Tzuras Chakuka Bekisei HaKaved. He loves his son, the enemy of good. That's what a father does. You know, I have a friend, Meish Geller, he shared with me a beautiful story. He says, this son, he's very successful. I don't know what he is. Maybe he's Rosh Hashiva. Maybe he's a corporate M&A guy. I don't know what it is. He comes home to his elderly parents, and his father's already old. He's not, he's losing it maybe a drop. So he says to his father, Papa, Tata, Abba, you want to go for a walk? So they go for a walk in the park. And there's a little blue jay hopping on the floor. So the father looks at the son, and he says to his very bright, you know, aggressive, young, smart son, he says, what's that? With a little smile. And the son says, Papa, it's a blue jay. They're walking a few minutes later, and he points again at the birds, and he says, what's that? And the son said, Dad, I said, it's a blue jay. The father's just like happy. And a few minutes later, he says, what's that? And he points again, and the son says, Abba, I said, it's a blue jay. It's a blue jay. What's with you? And he comes home, and he says to his mother, he says, you know, I just can't deal with it. Like, I'm pulling the hair out of my head. He asks me the same questions again and again, three times. I yelled at him. It's like, what is it? So the mother just thinks for a minute. She says to her son, I want to show you something. Wait a minute. She goes upstairs, and she comes back with a book. It's his father's diary. And it says, today, Donnie turned 3. I took him for a walk out back. 24 times he asked me, what's that? And 24 times I hugged him and kissed him and said, it's a blue jay. That's the love that a father should have for his child. And that's Yitzchak. He loved a Yehav Yitzchak as Esav. So I saw something amazing. It was actually sent to me. You know, Rabbi Yankel Galinsky writes, he said he heard this from the Stipler. Now, the Stipler's no Chassidisha. I mean, he comes from Darren Stipler, I guess, but lived in Bnei Brak. He was, you know, big guy in Gilas Yaakov. This is what the Stipler writes. He says, it says in next week's parsha, it says, Eliphaz ran after, pursued Yaakov and was supposed to kill him on Esav's say-so, his father's say-so. And what does Yaakov say? Take money and ani chashuv kemeis. So Rashi says he took the money, and he says, why did he take the money? So Rashi says, because Eliphaz was niskadel al birke Yosef. He grew up in the lap of Yitzchak. I'm sorry, on the lap of Yitzchak, al birke Yitzchak. So the disciple says, Eliphaz grew up in the lap of Yitzchak? He says, think of it. What do we know about Eliphaz? He says, Baal Eshes Aviv. He raped his father's wife. And what did he from it, v'haylad mimenu mamzeres, and he had from that a mamzeres, who was the child. Her name was Timna, right? An affair with his father's wife, right? And, what does he do with Timna? She becomes his pilege, she becomes his partner. So he's now living with his sister, who's a mamzeres from the father's wife. And who's their child? Is Amalek. So I think in the Torah, Eliphaz has to win the award as like the baddest guy around. Worse than Esav, even the father of Amalek. Married his daughter, I mean, not married, but who's a result of a mamzeres of his father, right? Really, the baddest guy. And what does it say? And Eliphaz, niskadil al birchas Yitzchak. So what does that mean to me and you? What's the masi of Esim and Labanim? You know, however different our children are, they could be so different from us. They have different ideas. He does this, and I wanted him. You know what? I guarantee anybody to our listenership. And our listenership today, I don't know, it's close to 10,000 people. And if somebody could email me, I'll apologize. There's not one person in our listenership who could say that their son is worse than Eliphaz, their grandson. And what does it say about Yitzchak? Yitzchak loved him. And that's what saves Yaakov. The love of Yitzchak is what stops Eliphaz from killing Yaakov. So Yitzchak, that's the Maisi of Esim and Labanim. I want to put a caveat on this. We see in last week's parsha where Sarah chases Yishmael out of the house. So which way is it? Do we love the child? Do we chase out the really you know, the very, very, very difficult trial. So I would say like this, and I ask any of my listeners if they have another thing. And it says, what does Kaviyachol say to Avram? Listen to Sarah. She's great in Nevuah. So this wasn't some, you know, callous or some, you know, just flighty action by Sarah. But I think it's like this. You know, you could be a gutta. You could really love your child and say, I'll overlook anything. I will continue to love them. But you can't do it on somebody else's expense. So by Yishmael, it says, Mesachek im Yitzchak bina. She saw Yishmael was the maces of idea. He was hurting. He was impacting Yitzchak. And Sarah says, it's all right to be a tzaddik, to accept the, you know, Hara. She accepted, she brought her into the house, but not if it's going to impact the other children. On the other hand, with Yaakov, we see he's impervious to Esav's rishis. He's impervious to Eliphaz's issues. Now it's the parents. In my house, such a child should live. It's the past mechnish. People will make fun of me. It hurts me. He's different. He's disrespectful. He doesn't respect my desires, what I wanted him to be. He's not living out the type of life that I wanted. For that, Yitzchak sets the goal. It's not your life. Your job is to love. If he's impacting the child, it's somebody else. You can't be a good son. Somebody. You can't be so accepting when it's impacting the other children. I think that's the Maisi Avos, Simon Labanim, from this week's Parsha.
Rabbi David, for the introduction, good vach, and welcome to tonight's panel. We do have the privilege this evening of having with us Rav Chaim Weg Shlita. He's the Rosh Koil of the Beis Avad Koil for Dayonis, training over 18 Dayonim for the future of Klal Yisrael. Rav Weg is formerly the Rosh Koil in Scranton, New Jersey. He just recently relocated and accepted the position of Rosh Koil at the Beis Avad Dayonis Koil. And we will follow by having the schus of being with Rav Yosef Greenwald, long distance in Yerushalayim. Rav Yosef is also a dayan at the Beis Avad, as well as other Bati Din in Yerushalayim. He's a frequent presenter in some of the very popular Beis Avad Halacha series, audio series, like Daf Yoimi in Halacha and Halacha Beis Avad on the Parsha series. He's one of the leading Chosher Mishpat authorities, especially with the Anglo community in Yerushalayim. And we're going to be discussing three elements of the marketplace, of the buying and selling. You know, today's market has taken on a very new shape, a new reality. You know, in the olden days, a person came into the store and you analyzed the mekach, you analyzed the purchase, and you were able to ask maybe a professional what the value is. And there's various, the Gemara talks about Oino and talks about mekach tois. We're going to discuss how the halachos of Geneva's Das, which I'll introduce in a minute. The halacha is of oino, which means overcharging, and the halacha of mekach tois, where a person sells something with a defect. How careful a person has to be to inspect the item. What the recourse is if there is a defect in the mekach. And you know what makes today's environment different is many times you don't know who's at the other end of a purchase. You don't see, there's no face-to-face interaction between the parties. And we're not sure if the person is a Shomer Torah Mitzvah or if he's an Einu Yehudi. And there are significant differences. You know, it just was presented with a question yesterday. A serious emergency question. Somebody called the Halacha Consultation Line, the Beis Avad's Dayanim, took the question. A person had just realized that he had taken a loan from Quicken Loans. And Quicken Loans, it's something very important that everybody, all of the listeners should know about, is Quicken Loans is owned by a Jew, a fellow by the name of Dan Gilbert, and he's unfortunately not a Shomer Torah Mitzvah, and it's very important that, when a person, there are ribbis issues. We know that there's a big difference between borrowing with interest with regards to a bank or a lending situation, which is Einu Yehudim, which are not that are not obligated in the halachas of ribis, or when we deal with a Jewish lender. A Jewish lender would be a very severe, serious issue of ribis. So the person had engaged and took a loan out from Quicken Loans, and the way Quicken Loans is structured is usually the loan is sold to somebody on the outside. It's sold to a clearinghouse, or sold to another lender. So now, when Quicken Loans, it's a ribis, it's interest that was generated by a Jewish lender, and then it was sold to the open market, and we don't know who ended up with it. And the question is, you know, do we assume that it was somebody who's obligated in the bank is obligated in the issues of ribis, the issues of ribis or not? This halacha of ribis, the halacha, the difference between a Yehudi and an Eino Yehudi with regards to commerce expresses itself in the halacha of ribis. The Torah says v'chai ochicho imoch, the prohibition of ribis is only to ochicho, somebody who's itcho b'toyra u'b'mitzvois, and the isra of eino, of charging too much, is also only between ben Yisrael Yisrael, but not ben Yisrael la'amim. We know the isra of eino, to charge too much or pay too little, is derived from the pasuk in Parshas Bahar, V'chisimku mimkala amisecho oisha kono miyad amisecho. Whenever it says the word amisecho, it implies that it's dafka amisecho, your am, ben Yisrael Yisrael, but this the isser does not apply ben Yisrael le'umais ha'olam. And therefore, when selling online, selling on, you know, on Amazon, or you know, dealing with different online loans, one has to know if there's any difference. If you know, we don't know who the other person is. Do we have to be boidic? Do we have to try to find out, etc.? So I'm going to start with the Isser of Gneivas Das, and Mitzvah Hashem, I will introduce Rav Weg, who will discuss the issue of Eino and how it plays itself out in today's marketplace, and will be followed by Rav Yosef Greenwald Shlita, who will address the issues of Mekach Toys. Gneivas Das, very interesting words. What does it mean, Gneivas Das? It's very interesting, very apropos to tonight, Motzei Shabbos. The word Gneivas Das, you're stealing his Das. What does it mean, you're stealing a person? How do you steal a person's Das? So the Gemara in Baruchas tells us, asks, why is Havdalah mentioned in Matzah Shabbos in the bracha of Choynein Hadas? So the Gemara says, Im ein das Havdalah minayin. We know the brain has different elements. There's Bino, Maven, Mitech Dover. Das is the part of the brain that's able to differentiate between two things. So in Choynein Hadas, that's what we say Havdalah. So when a person's Goynev Das, what he's doing really is stealing his ability to differentiate and to make a wise decision. Every decision we make in commerce and business anywhere is based on a bunch of facts, and if we're presented with all the facts, we can make a conscious decision and we can be a good consumer. If the facts are fudged over or misrepresented, so you're stealing the person's das, his ability to make that wise decision, and that's why when a person is going to das, it's also now Gneivas Das. We know that the Gneivas Mamon, there's something called Gneivas Akum, is usur, just like stealing from anybody. Gneivas Das also would be usur with regards to an Eini Yehudi, when Ben Yisrael Le'umos Oilam, there is also a problem with Gneivas Das. The Ritva tells us it's derived from the Pasuk and Parashas Kedoshim, and it applies, it's a question if it's Daraisa or Derabbanon. But it's definitely also the Gneivas Das is also. So Gneivas Das means you're misrepresenting the facts, you fool somebody, you trick somebody. That would be an Isser Gneivas Das. Gneivas Das is, there's really two types of Gneivas Das. There's a type of Gneivas Das which we'll focus on today, which is regarding commerce. When a person buys and he sells something, or he sells something hiding a defect or misrepresenting the fact, even if the price is right. Means even if you're selling a defective item for a lower price, if you misrepresent the facts, so there's the issue of Mekach Tois, which Rabbi Greenwald we'll address, but there's also the issue of gneivas das, fooling somebody to buy something that they wouldn't buy if they ignore all the facts. So there's that. That's the simple. Gneivas das also can play itself out on a social level. When you fool somebody, you make them think that you're doing them a big favor, or you make them indebted to you. The Gemara talk in Chulin talks about where there were chachamim that were taking a walk on the shores of Akko at the border of Eretz Yisrael, and all of a sudden they found one of the Amiroyim coming towards them from Chutz Laretz, and he was very visibly touched by the fact that these chashav Amiroyim came to greet him, and he said, "Thank you so much for coming out to greet me." And we're in essence these Amiroyim were just taking a walk; they didn't come out to greet him. And the Gemara goes back and forth. Really, there would be a problem of gneivas das. When you go, let's say a person's in a faraway city and there's a chasen of a friend who a person would not necessarily travel for, and you represent that you came in special for the wedding, that could be gneivas das, even though there's no business involved. And there we have the concept called iu da'atei anavshei, the Gemara in Chulin, which we just discussed, relates that since the Amiroyim could have been on this shore for many reasons, if the person who is getting tricked assumed that it was for their kavod, they're really tricking themselves, and therefore may not be gneivas das. But that's really more of a social issue. The Gemara talks about a person opening a new barrel of wine where he has to open it anyway. Wherever you're giving to somebody or giving somebody kavod, you're not really giving them kavod. There's a different reason why you're doing this action that would be considered gneivas das. But let's focus a little bit on gneivas das of mamon. How a person acts, plays itself out in a few different ways. We all try to market our items and put them in the best light, and that's fine. A person is allowed, a company, a store, a vendor is allowed to make their product look the best, polish it up, shine it up to make it look good. Of introducing HaGoyin Rav Chaim Weg Shlita, the Reish Koil, we'll talk now a little bit about the Isurim of Einor, about the issue of overcharging and how it plays itself out in today's marketplace.
Okay, so joining us now is HaGoyin Rav Chaim Weg Shlita, the Reish Koil at the Beis Avad Koil of Adayonis, formerly the Reish Koil of the Scranton Community Koil for many years, a tremendous Talmud Chacham and Pesach. Gutzvach, Reb Chaim, thank you very much for joining us this evening.
My pleasure.
Okay, so we're going to segue now into the concept, the Isser of Einor. There's many different classifications with regards to the Surim of Mekach Tois and Gneivas Das that were mentioned, different areas that we need to address with regards to commerce in today's day. So, if you can give us kind of just like a little overview of what exactly Einor is and how it relates to today's marketplace. I think that would be a little hagdam, I think, would be in place.
Okay, David. The Torah in Parshas Behar teaches us that there's a lot of Einor. The Allah Torah tells us that whenever Yidden buy and sell from each other, they are only allowed to buy and sell at a fair price. That there's a fair price, which is the buyer and selling. The buyer and seller are buying into a true and a fair price. And therefore, to sell above market value or under market value, knowingly, would be an Iser Deraisa. And even if one would sell above market value or under market value unknowingly, so then if the difference is more than a sixth, more than 16.7%, so then in such a case, the mekach would be batel, and depending on who was cheated, whether it was overpriced, and therefore the buyer was cheated, or it was underpriced, and the seller was cheated, so then the Mekach would be undone. Obviously, there are certain conditions to when and where and what the time frame to undo the Mekach is. But basically, the Ainoa has two parts. There is a loisase, that the price, l'chatchila, must be a fair price. And if it is not a fair price, so then the one who is cheated, the Meicher or the Lokeach, could undo the sale.
Right. So what you're saying is that, you know, every consumer basically, you know, usually the seller is, you know, basically the one who takes charge of the transaction, and they sell. He's conveyed a price. He sets the price with it, you know, pricing. You're saying that the buyer also, if it's for too, if the product is being offered for too little, that the buyer has the yisur ainoa, and you're saying basically that the buyer has to, you know, take a proactive approach as far as letting the seller know exactly, you know, that he's underpriced before buying it.
Yes, Rav David. The lav leisainu is a lav both on the buyer and the seller. And the Chofetz Chaim says very clearly that if a person comes into a store and he knows that the item is underpriced, he must inform the seller so as not to cheat the seller.
So if someone goes shopping, they're going to the store and they see something that's underpriced, you have to tell the store owner that this is underpriced and please raise your prices.
Correct. Now, we have to understand something. This doesn't mean that every person who wants to go shopping has to go ahead and research prices in all comparable stores at all. And really, to really understand today's business world, one has to really understand a little bit how it used to be and then have a better understanding of how things work today. When one looks in the Gemara and even Shulchan Aruch, that most items that were sold in those days were more or less unique. In other words, a person, a woman would knit a sweater, and her husband would go to the marketplace, and he would try to sell the sweater. And really, there were no two sweaters which were exactly the same. Each one had a maila, each one had a chasarn. And based on the various qualities of the workmanship and everything else, that would determine... That would determine what the true price was. And therefore, the Rush writes that one has to recognize that sometimes it could even be Chilukei Deis. There could be Chilukei Deis, people who have a disagreement, what exactly is this item worth? And we do find in Chazal a lot of going to a Shamoi, going to somebody who would, in various circumstances, to figure out what things are worth, not necessarily in a Noah, because the price, most items that were sold were more or less unique. And the Rush, in fact, says that the reason why, if it's less than 16.7%, less than a shtus, there's a mechila, is because, and therefore you can't undo the sale if the discrepancy to the true price was within a sixth, within 16.7%. The reason why the sale can't be undone is because the Amoicher and Lekeach will never agree exactly how much an item is worth, and therefore the price will always have some variation in price, and that's normal, and that's what we say, that if the mechila, if the price is less than a shtus in an off-market value, then there's automatic mechila, because people can't agree on exactly what things are worth. And in fact, the Aruch HaShulchan writes that if you have a product which is market controlled by the government, so then even if it's off, even if the price is off less than the shtus, less than 16.7%, there would still be the parsha of Ainoa, because then the person was clearly cheated. But, you know, when one has to figure out what an item is worth, so there's obviously a certain amount of discretion, a certain amount of discrepancy between people, a certain amount of disagreement, and therefore less than a shtus is, less than a sixth is not considered to be a Ainoa. And if it's done totally unwittingly in good faith, then everybody agrees that there's no isser even lechatchila for two people to disagree honestly what something is worth. Now, today, the market conditions are very different, because today, except, maybe a used car or a piece of property with real estate. There's no way I know about real estate in most cases. The lifestyle still might be there. But most items which the average person buys and sells, are items which have been duplicated, which there's 1,000 or 10,000 of them on the market. And the pricing will depend very much on the exact location where it's being bought and sold, the service of the store, if it's a higher-end store where there's more service, then it costs more in that store. And if one is going to a bargain store, or to a different location, it might cost a little bit less. But today, based on the overhead and based on the location of the store and other market factors, the expected variation of prices is not so much in what the actual wholesale price of the item was, even though sometimes different people can get different prices from wholesalers, but it'll have much more to do with other factors. And therefore, when one enters a store and, it seems to be in range, what one would more or less expect to pay for this, then one assumes that based on the circumstance in front of us, this is a fair market price, and one does not have to do research, one does not have to find out what other stores are selling for this item. One could easily assume that this is a fair price for this item. It will come in when there was some variation in the market. In other words, if you know that there was a variation in the market and the seller may not know or the like, that would be a more common case where a no would apply today, and you would have to inform the meicher of the variation of the market conditions. But generally speaking, one can assume that one is getting a fair market price when one walks into a store.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Because that's really, the store is very similar to, there are some differences, like you mentioned. Today there's an entire new reality, which is basically taking over slowly the entire retail market, which is about, buying something online. Now, when you're buying online, you don't even know who's on the other side, who's the seller many times. Certain times you might know, you may not know. And you don't even know the religion of the seller. So the question is, we know that the concept of ino is really specific to ishes amisecho. Soinu ishes ochiv, we were able to to exclude from there an Eini Yehudi, is something that's specific to sales of Eini Yisrael. And also, there's the variation of prices. There's so many different ways to buy some things these days. Like, how does today's reality play a role with the Yisrael of Eino?
Well, it's very clear in Shulchan Aruch that if the person knows that the item is worth more than he's charging it, then that is worth more than he's charging for it, and the reason why he's charging less is because any confluence of factors, he needs the cash for a quick sale, or for some other factor. So then there would not be an Isser of Aino. The Isser of Aino, Loisainu, is you're oppressing, you're cheating. If a person, Bedafka, for whatever reason he has, wants to sell an item for less, so that's obviously mutter. So really, your question is that even if somebody were to know that they are buying from a Yehudi, so the question is, if you see an item online, you don't see the person face-to-face, you don't know why he's selling, you don't know his various cheshbonos, do you have to assume that he is out of touch with the market conditions? Or can one assume that he knows what he's doing, and for some reason he's on purpose charging a cheaper price, he wants to get rid of it, he needs more room in his storage house, it costs him more to store. And I believe that in today's market conditions, one can assume that the person knows what he is doing. And this really goes back to a little bit what we were explaining before. In the olden days when items were individualized, so, you know, somebody can make a gross mistake. One, somebody could think that this sweater is not so warm, really, the sweater is much warmer. One could think the workmanship is better than is worse than it really is. And therefore, there was much more room for that type of error. Today, where you know, if it's a uniform type of item, an MP3 player, a book, a safe, or whatever else it is, as long as it's an item which is not subject so much to a shuma, to, you know, that's not, people are not going to debate exactly what it costs. We're not talking about a rare painting or something, but you're talking about, you know, the regular buys and takes to sell a camera and MP3 player. One could assume that the meicher does know what he's doing. And even if one would know for sure that he's buying from a Yehudi, there's no reason why one has to assume that a mistake is being made, and therefore we would assume that it is yada umachal. That, you know, that's without going into the issue if we have revakum, we don't have revakum, but just again, since you know today is different than it was in the times of Chazal, that we're not, that the price is not determined so much by shotsing up the value of the item, but rather the price is more determined by the confluence of factors of commerce, of buying and selling, there's really no reason why one would have to assume that the seller has made a mistake. And therefore, you know, as long as it's within some sort of range, but one would not have to inform the seller. One could assume that this anonymous seller knows what he is doing.
Mm-hmm. Okay, very interesting. It's something that's on everybody's mind all the time. I mean, especially with the media, social media, and all the deals and glitches and various other ways of purchasing items that's very cheap. You know, what does one have to keep in mind when they find one of these great deals due to a glitch, etc., online? Like, what is that? When does one have to? Is a lot of person allowed to jump on and take advantage of it? Is there a difference, with what religion the company is, you know, listed under, or does the person have to, you know, worry about these things? And what's your chavistat? What's your hadroche when faced with one of these amazing deals that's due to a mistake or a computer glitch?
Well, as we said, that what is Einoah? Einoah is when two people agree to sell a particular item for a particular price. And the reason why somebody is getting ripped off over here, or somebody is being cheated over here, is because they do not have a proper appreciation of what the item is worth. And since they don't have a proper appreciation of what the item is worth, then they made an upbach, right? There's a das meicher and a das kaina. The meicher wants to sell for so much, the kaina wants to buy for so much, and they don't have a good understanding of what the item is actually worth. But they did have a meeting of the minds to sell this item, this, let's say, MP3 player, for $10. So there's a meeting of the minds. We both agreed to buy and to sell this item for this price. And that is the classical case of Einoah. The classical case of Mekach Toys is when we sell the wrong item. For example, if I make up with you to sell you an MP3 player for $10, and you open up the package when it comes, and it's a camera, so then in that case, since the item is a different item than we agreed to sell, that is not a no. That goes into the category of mekach tois, and therefore that would apply to a non-Jew also, because that's you're just taking something which doesn't belong to you, because this is not what he agreed to sell to you. Now, if you go to a store and the item is clearly marked wrong, it's a computer mistake or a human error mistake, so in that case, there was no meeting of the minds. We never agreed to sell the MP3 player for $10, and then we realized afterwards that this is a higher end product, but rather we never agreed to sell this item for this price. And therefore, that would not be a no issue. That would be a mekach tois issue. And since that would be a mekach tois issue, so that would be a more severe issue. It would apply, you know, to, you know, would not have the leniencies of a no, which the no does not apply to everybody, and a no also has a time frame in which one can be chayzer. Now, on a practical level, you know, this question always, you know, gets more complicated. There could be laws and regulations involved. Sometimes the company might afterwards feel that it's kedai for them to honor the price offered, and for a final psak, one should ask their local rav who's experienced it in chayshe mishpat. But for the extent of our discussion, one has to realize that aino is when we agreed to buy and sell this item for this price, but we did not understand what the item was worth. However, in a case where there was no meeting of the minds, that would not fit into aino. Now, I just wanted to mention, and again, one should ask a shayla and ask a dayan, but you know, there are cases which could sometimes be even debatable. In other words, what happens if you buy, if you come into a store and they're selling you a defective item? They're selling you a defective item, and this defective item is priced low because the seller believes that it's a very difficult item to fix, and therefore he feels it's not worth very much. You, on the other hand, have the knowledge that it is an item which is easily fixable. Or let's do the case a drop better. You already bought it. Right? You already bought it. Are we dealing with an issue of a na'ah, or are we dealing with an issue of mekach tois? Do we say, well, that you went to the store, you bought it, you bring it home, and you now see that it is easily fixable, right? Let's not go whether mutter to buy, usher to buy, let's not do the lav, or the iser, let's rather do the mumminus chalik. You bring the item home and you notice that you were sold under the guise that it was hard to fix, and you see that it is easy and cheap to fix. Is that an issue of a no, because the price that you're paying is different than its true price? You know, it was sold for $10 based on that assumption. Really, it's worth $100 because it's very easy to fix. Is that a no issue because the price was different? Or do we say that that's a mekach tois issue because the object that you got was a different object than you actually expected to get, right? Clearly, if you ordered an MP3 player, you get a camera, it's a different item. If you get what you want just, you know, because of some marketing factors, it's worth more, which the person didn't know about, that's, you know, that's enough. But over here, one could clearly argue that this could be both is this a different item, and therefore goes into the category of mechatois, or is this a misunderstanding in the price, and they agreed to sell it for this price, both the Moshe and the Lekech, and therefore would be an Eino issue.
A lot of times there's elements of both which have to be analyzed. You know, as you mentioned, it's always kedai to speak to a halachic authority, very important. We have a lot more to cover. We thank you very much for your time, Harav Wegg. Thank you very much for joining us tonight. And Hashem, we'll continue with the next topic matter, the topic of Mekach Tois, with Rabbi Greenwald. Thank you very much, Rabbi Wegg, Tiskol Mitzvahs, and have a good Tvach.
Okay, so joining us now is Rabbi Yosef Greenwald. Dayan Greenwald is a dayan here at the Beis Avad, lives in Yerushalayim. Dayan, as well in other Bate Din in Yerushalayim, a very frequent presenter of some of the popular Beis Avad audio series, the Daf Yomi in Halacha and Beis Avad in the Parsha, a leading Chosha Mishpat authority, especially in the Anglo community in Yerushalayim. Agutvach, Rav Greenwald.
Agutvach, Rav David, always a pleasure.
Okay, welcome. So, you know, Rav Greenwald is going to be focusing primarily on the Inyanim, the part of the segment of this show with regards to Mekach Toos, defects and, you know, obligations of a seller as with regards to ensuring that the, you know, the product that he's selling is intact and without a mum, without a blemish, without a defect, and on some of the remedies, you know, and a certain recourse, you know, what a person, like as we discussed earlier, you know, many times we don't even know who the buyer is in today's fast-paced selling market. We're not sure who's on the other end of a sale, you know, so there could be serious halachic differences and implications with regards to, you know, who if we can assume that, you know, the person at the other end of this, the buyer might be, you know, from a Yehudi or any Yehudi. Anyway, so, you know, maybe Greenwald, maybe you can you know, open up by giving us a little bit of an overview of what the halacha of Mekach Tois is all about, how it's different than Oino, which Rabbi Weg is addressing. How would you classify? How do you explain to the audience exactly what the different terms are?
I think, as a bird's eye view, we could start with one basic hakdama. Interesting is, for those that are interested in a more lumdus-based look, this exact principle is defined in the Chiddush of Chaim Alev El Aram, but it's really clearly in the Shulchan Aruch, and it provides a basis for defining the halachah l'maaseh differences between Mekach Tois and Oino. And the chiluk is like this. Oino means that two parties have agreed on a price and a commodity, an item, a service, whatever you'll have between them. The point is that it's overpriced, underpriced, and the Torah provides the recourse for the wrong party to protect his rights by claiming Oino. Because it's only a right that could be claimed, therefore there's a statute of limitations, there are other limitations by karka, anything that's real estate, there is no dine Oino. What's not true by Oino is true by Mekach Tois. By Mekach Tois, the principle of the matter is that when Reuven and Shimon do business, and Reuven is supposed to sell Shimon a car, and the car is supposed to be model so-and-so, quality so-and-so, make so-and-so, for a certain price, and that car isn't what it was cracked up to be, it's not what it's supposed to be, the point is that the sale was never consummated. The car that exchanged hands, there's something wrong with the motor, transmission, you know, whatever it is. The point is that car wasn't bought by Shimon. Shimon Ke'ilu bought a different car, the goods were never provided. You know, they could walk away from the deal because the deal never happened, it was never created. The car will go back to Reuven, the seller, the money will be returned to Shimon, or they can make their peace with it, which would really mean a renegotiation of a new sale. Or Shimon, if he wants, could be Moichel on the Mum. In that sense, he could be Mavater, he could waive his claim to do away with the sale. But the basic guiding principle in Mekach Tois is that there is no sale. In which case, Reuven would have to make good on really giving back Shimon his money. Money that would be held by Reuven against that sale, if the sale was never consummated, it's as if he took money from Shimon without any legitimate reason to. No sale was consummated. Mm. Check that out. The seller cannot force a discount on the buyer for lowering the quality. If the buyer says, look, that's not what I bought, so then there was no sale. You could renegotiate, but it's a different bird. It's a different deal.
Right. Okay. That's a very important point. Okay, whereas I know sometimes, you know, if it's exactly a shtus, then the if it's exactly a sixth more, then it would the mekach would be valid, and they would just have to adjust the price. You know, so that could be another difference. Okay, you know, there's a lot of, many times you find in stores, you know, or online or whatever it is, certain policies with regards to return. Like you're saying here, that Mekach Tois, he has a right to ask for a return. You mentioned the fact that by I know there's a certain statute of limitation, like at Ad Kadesh Yir LaTagor, you know, a certain time where the person has to evaluate the Mekach, the purchase, and then he could, you know, during that, once that time passes, he loses his rights. And you said that with regards to Mekach Tois, that's not true. And the person could return an item forever. I mean, it's 6 years later. How does that work?
So you're right in principle. Shulchan Aruch HaShemish, but Reish Lam Vez clearly tells us that there is no statute of limitations. Mekach Tois Chozer La'olam. What's important to point out is that Shulchan Aruch does allow for the basic fact that after a certain amount of time, it's clear, or it should be clear, that the buyer has obviously, if you've driven the car, can't come back 5,000 miles later and say, oh, I just realized that there's a problem with the transmission. Nobody drives
the car
5,000 miles.
With regards to the car, the person's using it. Right? If the person used it after he realized there was a moment, that would change the story, would it not?
Yeah, so Shulchan Aruch does recognize that if you used it, you made your peace with it. If you got it, and it's clear beyond the shadow of a doubt that this is something that you knew about, and now, you know, 6 months later you just decided to have second thoughts, you want to return it. That would not be permissible, because over there it's clear that the loikeach made his peace with it. That has nothing to do with the policy.
Right, but let's say he hadn't used it, but if he hadn't used it and a long time went by, so then he still would be able to
He'd still be able to return it. Right.
So now how about, like, a lot of stores want to get out of that, and they make certain return policies. They hang a sign in the store, or, you know, I would assume that, you know, it's if that was, like, stipulated clearly on the sign, like, it says on the sign, 30-day
return
policy or store credit only. You know, many times you get stuck, you know, buying very expensive items, and you come back, you return it, you know, when, let's say there's a defect, you know, if there's no defect, so I would imagine that would be valid. In other words, just to check if, you know, because really in halacha you have no right to return at all, right? If there's no defect.
Right. So that's a point very well made, and I think we have to splice that into two. Whenever something was sold, moicher lekech, somebody goes into a store, buys something in a regular retail outfit. If there's a defect in the merchandise. So then, again, like we pointed out, Mekach Tois Chozer La'olam, he could return it as long as he wants. If there's no defect, so then return policy means there was a mechira. Halacha doesn't have such a thing as a return policy. If there was a defect, no Mekach was consummated, and there it would be Chozer La'olam. And the fact that the store puts up a sign that says 30-day return policy has no validity in Halacha. Cannot be mechayev lekech, because there was no sale. If there was no sale, I could ask my money back. Masha Enkein, when we're talking about where there was no defect, but the store gives the wherewithal to customers to return the goods for 30 days, what's really happening over there is the mechira was a mechira. The loikeach is given a schus to sell back, so to speak, his purchase to the company. And obviously the company could say, look, I'm willing to buy it, but I'm telling you, I'm willing to buy it, but I'm willing to give you the schus to sell, to force my hand to sell it back to me, or to be mevatel the mechira, even though there was a legitimate mechira consummated. The mechira was chal, but I'm only willing to commit myself to a 30-day schus on that. The same thing goes with store credit, by the way. If defects were found in, somebody goes into a store, a retail linen store, and he buys a new set of linen, and there were tears on the mattress pads. There's a problem with the sheets. For the moicher, for the store to only offer the buyer store credit is gzela, because there was no sale. You're holding on to money from the customer, shalakadin. Mashenke, if we're talking about the other case where there was no defect, all it is just the right to be mevatel mechira. So there was a sale. So there, really, the store can make up whatever policy it wants. The store can make up, I'm willing to sell it to you, but I'm only willing to sell it to you back the store credit. That's that's perfectly within the rights of the store.
So let's say they state clearly that the store credit only even for defective merchandise. Would that disable the person from returning and getting his money back?
What you're anticipating, I understand, Rabbi Grossman, your question is, does that mean that the lekech really was mevater moichel on his chus? So Shulchan Aruch deals with that in Reish Lamed Beis in the beginning. Shulchan Aruch says that there is no mechila on Mekach Tois because it's too open-ended. Halacha doesn't see that when somebody waives his claim to press for damages or press for quality, that a vague, open-ended, you can't come back to the store, no returns. We don't consider that a defined mechila in the sense of somebody being moichel akoyim, waiving a claim, waiving a tefiah that he has in bezin. We don't see it that way. The mechila would only go into effect if there was clear lemarshal. Let's say a store is selling merchandise, and they put up a sign that says it could very well be that any of the linen being sold in this store, now it sounds like something that a store would put up 70, 80 years ago. Today you wouldn't find a store putting up such a sign. Any of the linen is possible that there are tears. If there are tears, the customer makes his peace with it, so then that would be a clear, defined telling you if you're buying your moichel, and that would go into effect. Mm-hmm. So it would have to be really, really clear for the specific mum of the specific item. A general, vague, nebulous sign that says there's no such thing as returns would not
even
cut it.
Even if it specifies even for defective merchandise, if you don't specify the exact defect,
right.
So there would be too general of a mechila to
go into effect.
To forego his rights. I got a case, which is, I think, exactly Sarsar, and that's, somebody bought, a whole truckload of merchandise, a deal on Amazon from a seller, and the way it works is you buy a deal and you try to sell it to the next guy, sell the next guy. So in this specific case, and you don't even actually buy the deal, you don't commit to the deal until you have a buyer. So the seller basically commits to sell at a certain price. The buyer says, okay, I'm going to sign a PO or whatever it is, and then I'm going to try to find a buyer to buy it. So in this specific case, Reuven bought it from a non-Shemitah Torah mitzvah, somebody who wasn't coming to Bezdin at all, and he committed to, and he went to look for a buyer. He sold it, he got Shimon to go look for a buyer, and Shimon got Levi, and Levi got Yehuda to go and look for a buyer, and then somebody at the end actually bought the merchandise and took possession of part of the merchandise, and the merchandise came out to be defective. And
that's classic Sarsar.
Yeah, and the question was, can Yehuda, who has to eat the brunt of it, because the seller was not around, he was not coming to Bezin, he was a non Shomer Torah mitzvahs, and it was, we weren't going to take him to court, even, if Bezin were to allow, it was, basically he was bankrupt, whatever, it wasn't relevant to get money from the seller. So Yehuda went to Levi, who went to Shimon, who went to Reuven, and then Reuven had nowhere to go, they were all trying to return the merchandise, and there was no sale until the other guy bought it. It was he was really passing it on, and even there was a question of maybe that one of them was a real buyer, because each one paid the other one. But a sarser is where correct me if I'm wrong. But a sarser is where he doesn't take ownership at all. Is that correct? The classical case of the Gemara is where the sarser doesn't take ownership.
Right, but you see that the way the Peskim defines Sarsur, L'chore would include any case where there is no liability level, where it's not possible for him to have quality control.
Mm-hmm.
Again, there could be, there could be exceptions. There could be cases where, if there's water, basic water damage, even in a closeout store. I mean, if you had a flood that the stuff is getting moldy. But if we're talking about, you get a whole shipment from a warehouse that's closing down in China, we can't expect that the owner of the closeout, the closeout corporation is really going to test the stuff, for quality control. So you can't.
Yeah, but
you can't
the case of Mekach Tos is not only when you can expect, even if it's a defect that the seller didn't know about and it's not his fault and it was hidden and whatever, it's
true. But if it's this, the
bottom
the
line is you sold me about a defective item. And even though it wasn't malicious, but you're the one who sold it to me, so I go back to you, and you can try to go back to whoever you got it from.
Right, but the key word in Mekach Tos is always Adaita Dehochi. That means whatever the understanding of the deal. Again, this is the type of thing you really have to ask on a case-to-case basis.
Right.
Is there an Adaita Dehochi? Which is the same question we've discussed this, the Gabi Dina de Malchus Adina. Right. And with his government quality control, so it loved after the din of the Malchus, the din will redefine a schus of a buyer against the seller. But what it does do is that whatever standards there are in place, whatever safety controls, that will define that the understanding of the business that's being right. done between the Moichan and Lekech is on that level. So the right. same thing is true in terms of liability.
And Mitzvah Shem, we'll see you down the line, Yashar Koyach.